Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, coming to you via cell phone today. A little problem with my Skype, so if the sound is a little not so clear, let's just chalk it up to technology failing. Okay, so the show today, I want to talk about Trump's October surprises. We're right around the corner, and there will be an October surprise, or more than one, for sure. What will they be? What are the candidates? Well, both domestic and foreign. Well, we'll try to speculate on, based on reasonable developments, what we think those candidates for October surprise might be. But I also want to provide an update here on several areas of the economy that I think are important to keep tracking closely. One is the job situation. Another is, what's the latest with the economic stimulus negotiations in Congress between Democrats on the one side and in the House, and on the other, we've got the Republican Senate and the Trump administration. So we'll provide an update on that. I think that's important, and maybe clarify some a little of the history of these negotiations, because talk is up there again that we may have an agreement soon on a stimulus. And then I want to talk about the Federal Reserve that met again this past week. And once again, Fed Chair Powell pleading with Congress to pass some kind of fiscal stimulus because the Fed is pretty much at the end of its rope. So we'll look at that as well. And in the course of that, try to explain, you know, what is the Fed's role in this bailout? Is deeply involved. The central bank is deeply involved both in the fiscal side, even though it's the monetary side, and its own monetary track of bailout. Always say pre-bailout, as we've said before. So, you know, what is the relationship there? The two are tied. You cannot talk about a stimulus and recovery policy efforts without talking about the Fed, the central bank, and, of course, its cousin there, the private banks. Okay, so let's talk about the updates first here on jobs, the stimulus, and the Federal Reserve. And then we'll move on to this question of October surprises. Okay, jobs update. Well, once again, we have 1.5 million new filings for unemployment benefit claims. New, weekly, every week, more than 1.5 million of new filings. Now, remember, there's two kinds of filings for unemployment benefits. There's two programs. There's the regular traditional state unemployment benefits programs. And that number last week was 800,000 plus again. It's been 800,000 throughout the entire month of August. And before that, it was more than 2 million, and before that, and at the start of all this, it exceeded 6 million. So, oh, you hear, oh, only 800,000. Things must be so good. Well, it's not 800,000, because that's only the state. Then we have this federal PUC program for independent contractors and freelancers and so forth for the first time, which is still 660,000. So the total, 800 plus to 660, gets you over 1.5 million new claims for unemployment benefits in 1 week, last week. That doesn't sound to me like the situation's all that great in terms of jobs. You know, in a 2008-09 Great Recession, the worst we had was 600,000 in 1 week. Yeah. Now we've got 1.5 million still after 6 months every week. And, you know, the claims, the joint claims of the two programs are creeping up again in the last 4 or 5 weeks. Now, economists are trying to argue, mainstream economists, that, oh, you know, those unemployment claim filings are really not that high. What they're saying is that, oh, it represents a lagged in the filings because the payments are not as high as the filings. In other words, it's taken, particularly in the PUC program, it's taken a long time for workers who are unemployed and filing for benefits actually to get them. So it's overstated, they say. And then they say, oh, but you know, the payments of benefits are going down too. Well, obviously, that's because people are exhausting their benefits after 6 months. So the payments are going down. And don't forget, we ended the $600 a week supplemental benefit there at the end of July. Right? And all this comes on top of what I've been warning here, that we have a second wave coming, as large corporations who may not have been that impacted, like tech companies, for example, or defense companies, at all by COVID, you know, their workers just kept going. These companies are announcing and implementing major mass layoffs. Now, that's because they're restructuring. They know the economy has fundamentally changed in other ways. They know that we're in for a long period of weak demand. And what they're doing is restructuring as a result. Restructuring means figuring out how to continue with less workers. Well, the latest last week, Raytheon, the defense company, announced plans for 15,000 layoffs. 15,000. Restructuring here, right? And then on top of these mass large corporation layoff announcements, we've got the small businesses closing at a record rate, some of them, many of them permanently. And as I said last week, the National Federation of Independent Business, a trade group for small businesses, predicted that there would be as many as 21% of all small businesses closing permanently in the next 6 months if there wasn't a significant stimulus. And by the way, I don't see that there will be on the latter, but we'll see. And then we have the two paycheck phenomenon with K through eight education, distance learning. And as I said, there's going to be quite a few of two paycheck families, and one's going to have to stay home with the kids, particularly if the kids are, you know, 12 years or younger, to assist in this remote education. Well, I saw a number this past week that the effect could be as high as 4.3 million jobs. And by the way, those people who have to do that will have to quit their job. And if you quit, you don't get unemployment benefits, which means the unemployment benefit filings will be underestimating the actual number of unemployed, because you won't be able to apply for benefits if you quit. But the government's making you quit to stay home and take care of educating your kids, even though you'll continue to pay property taxes to the schools. But you'll be doing the work. Yeah, poor moms, they're going crazy, I'm sure. Okay, so those forces, corporate restructuring, small business closing, two paycheck quits, are the core of the next wave coming. You see, whether there's COVID or not, and some say, oh, we're going to have another COVID problem here in the winter. Whether that happens or not, we've got the causes of unemployment multiplying here. So that's the jobs update, and we'll follow that a little more closely. Keep a watch on it. because if you don't have jobs, you don't have income. You don't have income, you don't have consumption. You don't have consumption, you don't have GDP. You don't have growth, you slip into a relapse that confirms the W-shaped recovery here. All right, moving on. What about stimulus? What's happening with the stimulus in Congress? Well, let's look at it in a little bit of perspective here since March. Well, what happened in March was the CARES Act, right? And the CARES Act was $500 billion in unemployment and checks. It was the PPP small business program of two iterations of that, $660 billion on top of the $500 billion. It was $1.1 trillion in loans to medium-sized and large businesses. And it was $650 billion in tax cuts for businesses and investors. That got you to the $3 trillion, roughly. Okay, but that was all designed to be a mitigation, as I've said many times. Not a real stimulus, just to prevent things from getting worse. And boy, they got worse anyway, but they would have been a hell of a lot worse without the CARES Act. Particularly the $500 billion for unemployment and checks in the small business allocations. Because, as I've said, the loans to medium and large businesses have not been taken up. That's never even gotten into the economy yet. See, that's really there in case we have a financial crash and the businesses really have to take it up. They're saving that. That's in their back pocket. And the taxes, we don't know what's happening with the taxes, except that they won't be used to stimulate the economy right away. Maybe some will be taken up at the end of the year. We won't have an assessment of that effect until 2021. Okay. Then the House passed the HEROES Act, which is supposed to be the real stimulus. Stimulus meaning not just to prevent a collapse. By the way, the U.S. economy collapsed almost 10% quarter on quarter in the second quarter. And so did all the advanced economies, you know, in Europe, Japan, and everywhere else, you know, 10, except for the U.K., which collapsed 20% in one quarter. U.K.'s in deep doo-doo. One of the weakest economies in the world right now. Okay, so the HEROES Act was supposed to really stimulate the economy, meaning help it grow, not just mitigate the collapse. And Congress, the House, quickly passed that back in late May. And the Senate sat on it. The Republican Senate sat on it because they're not convinced, you know, that their constituency, which is big business, really needed it, and they didn't. This is not a generalized Great Recession. No. This is certain sectors of the economy really whacked. Some sectors of business really whacked, of course. You know, airlines, lodging, hotel, entertainment, so forth, services. But, you know, manufacturing is tech, you know, and others have defense, been able to just sort of continue through. And, of course, investors have done very, very well in the stock market. Quickly recovered right back where it was because of the generosity of the Federal Reserve giving money to the banks and investors. Well, we'll talk about that one, too. That's separate. Okay, so the HEROES Act languished. Nothing happened. And then in July, the Republicans' Senate responded with its proposal of, I think it was $1 trillion. They proposed $1 trillion. Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary and one of the lead negotiators, kind of working a little independent of Trump. You see, he's the soft cop here in negotiations, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. The hard cop is Trump's staff guy there, Mark Meadows. and of course McConnell saying, "I can't do anything. I can't do anything." Well, he can't because he's got his Republican split. You know, the Rand Paul's 20% of the Republican Senate there refuses to go along with anything. So they're really dead in the water over there in the Senate. Not that they mind giving the lead in these negotiations to Mnuchin and Meadows. So, you know, Mnuchin comes up with $1.5 trillion package here in July, and the Senate's proposed $1 trillion, and then had to back off. But then we have in early August, Trump steps in after he gets the Pelosi-Schumer Democrats to come down $1 trillion in their proposal from $3 trillion to $2 trillion, and he sandbags them, as they say, and they stomp out. And then Trump comes up with his four executive orders and takes control of the agenda, right? Remember those four? We've talked about those four. A phony executive order about evictions, rental evictions, in which it's left up to the states. In other words, just fancy words. An equally phony student debt executive order. You know how many people are in student, have student debt? 46 million Americans. $1.7 trillion, 46 million. You want a stimulus, right? Just expunge that debt. Well, that's not going to happen because the banks own most of it, or think they're going to get most of it. And then there's the payroll tax executive order. Remember that one? Payroll tax. He's going to defer payroll tax for workers. He already did it for companies. He's going to defer it. In other words, you'll have to pay it next year. You'll pay double payroll taxes next year. But for now, you get to keep your payroll tax. But there are problems with that constitutionally. And there are problems with that in terms of administration. Because legally, the businesses are responsible for turning in those payroll tax payments. And they may have to end up paying double payroll tax. They don't want to do that. So what's been happening is that thing is pretty much dead because a lot of businesses are saying they're just not going to do it. They're not going to, you know, what do we call it? Suspend collecting the worker share payroll tax when they have to pay it perhaps later themselves. It would be a legal bag of worms. They don't want to get into it. And then there was the fourth executive order, which was really about putting back $300 a week in the supplemental unemployment benefit that was ended when they ended the $600 a week at the end of July, restoring the $300 by diverting money from the disaster relief fund, federal fund there, FEMA, right, in which there was only $44 billion, and that would be gone in 5 weeks. Well, it's almost gone. Okay, so those were the executive orders, and that all that occurred in August last month. Right, and then, by the way, you know, on this evictions thing, let me just back up a little bit. On this evictions thing, estimates are 20 to 40 million people evicted from their rents. And now just today I noticed a report that said the mortgage forbearances, in other words, part of the CARES Act was that banks that you had your mortgage with could suspend your payments. You wouldn't have to pay for up to 9 months up until 2021, right? Well, the banks have been dribbling that out. In other words, you get 2 or 3 months, and then they ask you again. And if you want an extension, you got to opt in every 2 or 3 months, you see. But some folks have done that. But, you know, the report today I noticed in the Wall Street Journal said over 1 million mortgages that would have been eligible for forbearance never got forbearance. In other words, A million are in, not only were eligible, but now they're delinquent. They're in arrears, 90 days. So there's a million homeowners, not just 20 million minimum renters, but a million homeowners who could be foreclosed here fairly soon. Okay. So, you know, that's where we are at the beginning of September, as far as the stimulus negotiations are concerned. Well, what else can we say about the latest developments? Well, Trump signaled a few weeks ago that, well, he has $300 billion that he could deal with if he wanted to, in terms of implementing another stimulus on his own. Well, where does this $300 billion come from? Which, by the way, is about what the Senate said in late August in its proposal. The Senate, one more proposal by the Senate, that, $650 billion stimulus. $300 billion was already there unspent, they said, and then they would provide another $300 billion, mostly to small businesses. Okay. So there's this convergence here between the Senate saying, oh, we got $300 billion, and Trump saying $300 billion. Well, where does this $300 billion come from? I'll tell you. Right? The March CARES Act, the small business PPP program, allocated $660 billion for small businesses. I think about 5 million of the 30 million small businesses got something, which is all gone. Okay. So it only really spent $525 billion of that $660 billion. So there's really like $140 billion left over in that PPP program. They never distributed it to small businesses. Well, that's about half of what Trump is talking about. Oh, I got $300 billion. What was the other half? Well, the other half is what Congress allocated to the Federal Reserve Bank, or actually the Treasury, U.S. Treasury allocated to the Federal Reserve Bank to distribute in loans to businesses if necessary. Specifically, medium-sized and large businesses. Okay. That's what that other half of that $300 billion is. Now, this deserves an explanation. You know, it's a little complicated about money and banking and how the Federal Reserve works and what we call fractional reserve banking. You see, in the CARES Act, it said $1.1 trillion of loans to small business, medium-sized businesses and big businesses, right? Remember that? And I said a while ago, it's not really been allocated. Well, the way the banking system works, the Treasury gives bonds to the Federal Reserve as collateral, you might say, that allows the Federal Reserve to provide money to the private banks to lend. Now, the Treasury in the CARES Act allocated about $175 billion, $75 billion for medium-sized corporations and $100 billion for larger corporations, or thereabouts, to the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve then uses that as collateral, as I said, to issue 8 to 10 times more money to the private banks. You see, this is what fractional reserve banking of capitalism is about. They keep, they, meaning the Fed and then the private banks, only keep a small fraction of actual real money on their books. And they use that to lend out multiple, 8 to 10 times. So when Congress says, oh, we're going to lend medium-sized businesses, called the Main Street Program, $600 billion. That's based upon Treasury bonds given to the Fed amounting in no more than $75 billion. Kind of like a fractional reserve of eight to nine, right? $75 billion the Treasury gives to the Fed, and the Fed can then loan the business or allow business to borrow from it, you know, eight times that. Now, the thing to remember is that $75 billion was given to the Fed as a collateral to lend $600 billion to the private banks, or allow the banks to lend $600 billion, you know, to the economy, to businesses. Right? But only $2 billion of the $75 billion has actually been loaned out. So if we're talking about an 8 or 10 to 1 ratio, $2 billion, right? Really, only $20 billion has actually been loaned out under that program, not $600 billion. Only $20 billion has really hit the economy, not $600 billion. So it really isn't, I'm loaning the business, you know, under the CARES Act, well, $1.1 trillion. No, no. It all depends if the private sector and the private banks want to use that money. And they clearly don't want to use it. It's not happening. So that's not stimulus actually getting into the economy, you see. I mean, when you give it to unemployed workers, or you give it to state and local governments, they actually spend it. That actually gets into the economy, and then there's a multiplier effect, probably around 1.5 to 2 impact on the GDP, you see. That actually gets into the economy. The small business grants actually get into the economy. But these loans from, enabled by the Fed, you know, to the private banks, out to the economy, these loans of $600 billion, $500 billion, medium, large corporations, don't get in, haven't gotten into the economy. It's just on paper. That's why the stimulus is so damn weak. And that's why we're relapsing again. It's really only been a stimulus of maybe $1.5 trillion at most, not $3 trillion. I'm talking about the CARES Act, right? Of course, the HEROES Act, which was supposed to be the real stimulus, passed late May, is out there languishing, not been passed. Okay, so that's it's a little arcane maybe, you know, what is fractional reserve banking? But remember, you know, capitalism, the banking system, loans out far more than they keep in required reserves on hand, real money on hand. Well, why can they do that? Because in normal times, you know, you don't have large numbers of businesses and people going bankrupt or people rushing to the bank and saying, give me my money. That's called a run on a bank. When there's a run on a bank, you know, no bank keeps all the money it loaned out. And then you have a banking bust, a bankruptcy, you see. That's why, you know, fractional reserve banking works. So just to summarize my point, which is, you know, the Fed has been given about $175 billion, you know, which it multiplies out. If there's demand for it by the private banks and businesses, you know, 8 to 10 times that. Well, that money's still sitting there because, you know, just on the medium-sized Main Street program, lending program, there's only $2 billion of the $75 billion allocated. So, you know, 8 to 10 times fractional reserve, maybe $15 to $20 billion actually out there. Well, Trump thinks that that $73 billion is part of the $300 billion he's got to play with. And then, you know, an equal amount there for large businesses. Plus, you've got the $140 billion unspent grant money to small businesses, PPP. That's the $300 billion, you see, that he says he's got to play with. He can go further with it if he wants, but that's not enough to stimulate the economy either. You know, and that's half of what the Senate in August said, well, we got $600 billion that we propose to you Democrats. You know, $300 billion was already there, sitting there, and they're proposing another $300 billion for small businesses mostly, if the Democrats agree to eliminate all liability claims on businesses during COVID. Of course, Democrats aren't going to do that. So that brings us up to the last couple of weeks in negotiations. And Pelosi has signaled once again, oh, $2.2 trillion is what we'll agree to. Well, wait a minute. They said $2 trillion, right? Back in end of July. Now they increased it another $200 billion? Yeah, they did, $2.2 trillion, because the Republicans went down from $600 billion to $300 billion. Republicans are going in the opposite direction of the stimulus, so the Democrats say, well, the hell with that. You know, you want to keep going that way, we'll go back up. So where we're at is, you know, $2.2 trillion offering by the Democrats and $300 billion by the Senate and Trump. Now, Trump has just signaled this past week, well, he can agree to more than $300 billion. That's what Larry Kudlow said a couple of days ago. And that kind of, you know, regenerated talk about, well, maybe there will be a further stimulus here. There's a group in Congress of conservative Democrats and moderate Republicans, a group of 50 called the Problem Solver Caucus. They've proposed an attempt to break the deadlock, a package of $1.5 trillion. You know, that's sort of up from $300-600 billion Republican position. Who knows what the Republican position is? You know, it's all over, they got positions all over the map. Let's say it's the high end, $600 billion, and Democrats are at $2.2 trillion, so $1.5 trillion they've proposed. They're kind of the swing votes, maybe. It's a caucus of both senators and representatives. And this would include some kind of one-time checks again. Probably include the continuation of the $300 supplemental unemployment benefit, the PUC, through December. Reportedly, $500 billion for state and local governments about to go broke. And something for schools aid, aiding the schools. Okay, so that's where we are right now. $2.2 trillion. The bottom $600 billion, in between $1.5 trillion. Now, will we get some kind of compromise? I don't know, 50-50, who knows? If they don't, they're really dumb. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to be dumb. Quite possible. And we may not get a stimulus. If we don't get a stimulus here in the next couple of weeks, you see, then you're not going to get anything until next spring. Because the political instability will be so great around the November election, as I've been saying, and we'll talk about, and we'll write about next week, called Trump's Plan B. It will be so unstable, such a constitutional crisis, I think, is coming, that there's no way Congress, which will be a lame duck Congress between the election and, you know, signing in the new Congress, January 20th, it will be so much instability that there's no way they can pass anything. So it means you won't get any kind of stimulus of any kind until March. Now that's 6 more months of no stimulus, with the economy showing all kinds of signs on the job front, in consumption and so forth, business investment, of weakening once again. You know, the only thing where there's any growth was housing, residential housing. Rates came down. You know, rich people want to get the hell out of the cities. So private housing, construction is up, and sales and refis and everything is up. Commercial property construction is in a deep funk, in a depression. Nothing moving there. Autos, well, we had pent-up demand and, you know, all this inventory, auto companies due to the shutdown. And, boy, you get some good financing deals on autos and trucks. But that appears to have plateaued now. So where is the, you know, the real recovery coming from? Nowhere. Nowhere. And 6 more months without a stimulus, fiscal stimulus? Yes, possible. If they don't do it in the next couple of weeks, well, we'll see. My bet is 60-40 they won't. But I might be surprised. Now, the other thing, 5 minutes here more, I want to talk about what the Federal Reserve did this past week, right? As I said, Chairman Jerome Powell is pleading over and over with Congress, please pass your fiscal stimulus, please. Well, that's because the Fed is at the end of its rope. You know, it's essentially used its tools. Now, I wrote a book about that. Central bankers at the end of their ropes, monetary policy in the coming depression in 2018. Check out some of the reviews if you're interested in the topic on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Well, actually, you got to go to my website. You can get to my website, Kikos Productions, from the blog, jackrasmus.com, or just go Kikos, K-Y-K-L-O-S, productions.com, and select at the top bar the reviews tab. And you can read some reviews of central bankers at the end of the ropes, where I predicted central banks were at the end of their ropes, and that they wouldn't survive, as we know, for in more than another decade or so. Okay, they would have to change to some kind of public banking institute. All right, so the Fed this past week, other than Powell pleading, right? Well, what else can Powell do? Well, interest rates are as low as they can get without going negative. He's lowered interest rates short and long term as low as they can get. They're not even 1%, right? Short term, and even the 30-year Treasury bond, I think, is like 1.4 or something like that. If it goes lower, you're in negative territory, and the Fed said it will not move rates in negative territory. That's a real indication of failure. Okay, so that interest rate tool is broke. Right? What about QE, quantitative easing? In other words, the Fed just pumping money into the economy by buying treasury bonds and agency bonds and corporate bonds now and ETFs and so forth. Well, it's already doing that to the tune of $120 billion a month. You know, that's one of the main reasons why the stock market's recovered. The money keeps flowing into financial asset investment. There's other reasons, but that's part of it. You know, the Fed balance sheet, in other words, its debt. The Federal Reserve has a debt. Just as Congress has a debt, federal debt, they're separate debts, is $7 trillion and rising. They've added $3 trillion in just 6 months. Actually, they started late last year, bailing out the repo market, as it's called, by trillions. The federal deficit, of course, is up $3 trillion this year as well. I think it was $25 trillion now. We went from $22 to $25 trillion. Now, well, $7 trillion Federal Reserve debt is on top of that. Then there's even state and local government debt, maybe $5, $6 trillion on top of that. Okay, so QE, well, I guess they could throw more money at it, but, you know, it's not getting into the real economy, and that's been the case since 2008. Then they have, the Fed has one more tool, Powell says, it's called lending. And that's what I just described previously, you know. They could use treasury bonds to lend to banks if banks wanted to borrow the money from the Fed to lend to the private sector. You know, they could do that. They could do more lending. You know, there's $150 billion in treasury bonds provided by Mnuchin to Powell. They could increase that. But that's all he's got left, except this thing called forward guidance. You know, what was that? That's like a fourth tool. Forward guidance means the Fed is telling businesses and banks that, look, we're going to keep rates low. We're telling them what we're going to do, you see? That's called forward guidance. Substitute for action. And Powell just came out and said this past week, we're going to keep rates near zero, at least near zero, until the end of 2023 for three more years. Investors, speculators, bankers, you can be sure money will be nearly free. Three more years. But then he said on the other side of his mouth, three more years, really until we get the inflation rate up to 2% and unemployment back down to 4%. Well, what is it, 2023? Or is it 2% inflation, which they've never reached in decades, you see? It's a fictional target, 2% inflation rate. Yeah. In other words, they're saying, free money, come and get it. We'll subsidize you banks and investors for as long as the horizon, far as we can see. Okay. Let's talk now about October surprise in our last 15 minutes here. Domestic, well, something's coming with the vaccine. I mean, that's not revelatory, is it? We know that. That's coming, even if it's not ready. And it is a plural. Multiple things are coming, will be announced for sure. China's already reported. It's tested on thousands of people with results, positive, very positive results. Its own vaccine with no negative effects on people. It's already tested it, but you don't get that much in the U.S. media, do you? That it's already got it over there. And, of course, the Russians claim they're doing it, too. They've got something, we don't know for sure. But there's a race, a political race, to come out with in the U.S. private sector, can't be, beaten to the end of the race here, by these quasi-capitalist countries, traditional enemies of the United States. So they're going to announce something. But, even if they announce it, 30% of the people out there are anti-vaxxers in the U.S. They're not going to take it. And then, at least another 20% are going to say, hey, I'm not going to be a guinea pig here. This last trial, making it public, I'm not jumping in and taking that. So you're going to have over half of the people not taking the vaccine, even if it were totally effective when it comes out. And then there's a big problem of, will the private sector be able to produce enough of this? It's going to take at least 6 to 9 months, even in the best situation, given an announcement in October, for this thing to roll out. Okay. That's certainly one of the October surprises. Another surprise I think is possible is Trump will try to halt the mail-in ballot voting in several key states where he's not strong. He won't halt it in Florida, because they just announced in Florida, by the way, the appeals court, federal appeals court, appointed by Mitch McConnell's buddies, just reversed a decision in Florida by a lower court, which the lower court upheld a statewide voting initiative in which citizens of Florida said, if you were, you went to jail and you paid your time and everything, you got out, then you could vote. 2/3 of the Florida citizens said that. And that was upheld by a lower federal district court, but overturned by an appeals court saying, no, you got to pay up all of your fines associated with your incarceration and your conviction. And the fines, thousands of dollars, pay restitution or whatever, it's a kind of massive poll tax, and poll taxes are supposed to be, you know, illegal according to the Constitution. Well, you know, Constitution doesn't mean anything when there's politics involved. And what we got in Florida is 800,000 people who the citizens of Florida said should vote won't be able to vote. Massive voter suppression. So same thing in Georgia. 190,000 people have been taken off the rolls. You know, the investigator, Greg Pallas, recently uncovered this on the charge that they were felons. Well, you know, they looked at those that have been removed from the rolls, and they weren't felons. This voter suppression is going on everywhere. It's deep and extreme. Okay, so, you know, there may also be a Biden-Ukraine revelation here, you know, that Trump's holding his back pocket. So those are some of the domestic October surprises. Foreign, let me finish up on this. The foreign October surprise, in my opinion, will be a provocation invasion, probably by proxies of Venezuela. That's the big candidate. It's not going to be China. It's not going to be Russia. No. The Russians got some dirt on Trump, so it won't be that. But it won't be China. We still get most of our PPE from China. Iran, maybe. You know, there's more than what appears here with these deals that Trump is closing here with the United Arab Emirates here and Bahrain and some of the others, right? There's more than meets the eye. There's anti-Iranian politics here. He's lining up Middle East allies, giving them the deals. He's buying them with credits to buy more American military goods, jets and so forth. You know, they're preparing the ground for something here with Iran. But I think the real candidate is Venezuela, most likely. You know, there is a U.S. naval force off the coast in Venezuela. It's been there for a couple months now. And it's being prepared to blockade, I believe, all shipping to Venezuela at some point. You know, they've already interdicted two, three, or four oil tankers bringing crude oil to Venezuela's refineries. They've already stopped that, turned them away. But I think they're at a point here. They're being prepared to board these ships and stop them, seize these ships. Especially if they're Iranian ships. You see, they get two bites of the apple if they go after Venezuela. They get to suck in pressure here on Iran as well. I think they're going to cease shipping here at some point. And there's all kinds of other indications. Something's going on there. You know, Secretary of State Pompeo goes to Suriname, which borders Venezuela. Secretary of State don't go to Suriname. Have you ever heard of Suriname? It's just a jungle. You know, there's one city country down there in South America. Well, why did he go to Suriname here last week? Something's up. And there's all kind of rumblings in Colombia, which borders Venezuela on the other side, that the U.S. is preparing to use Colombia to invade. You know, the U.S. has 7 military bases in Colombia. The mobilizing the Colombia opposition, and who knows from the south, you know, with Brazil, although that's really jungle. That's going to be pretty hard to invade from the south, and the south is just jungle in Venezuela anyway, right? And all kinds of efforts to disrupt the elections. The Venezuelans said, hey, you know, we're releasing all our opposition from jail, and they can all vote, you know, free and open voting. And the U.S. doesn't want that. Well, you know, Venezuelans must not be too worried that people support them, if they're able, you know, willing to let the opposition actually run now. You know, all this talk about jailing the opposition, they let this puppet Guido go. Huh? And even the Europeans say, oh, no, you should put off your elections. You know, Europeans do the bidding of the United States when it comes to foreign policy. You know, if they didn't, you know, the military umbrella the U.S. provides for them, they'd have to pay for, and they don't want to do that. That simple. You know, the Germans even offered the U.S. $1 billion to build natural gas ports for, you know, the U.S. To sell its natural gas to Germany, if only the U.S. wouldn't stop sanctioning German companies to prevent the Russian gas pipeline, Nord Stream 2. The U.S. said, no, you buy our gas, even though it's more expensive, Germans. We don't want this pipeline. Yeah, I mean, Europe is just an appendage in terms of foreign policy. The United States does whatever the United States does. But, you know, there's been all kind of reported incursions. You know, former CIA mercenaries are been arrested, you know, skulking around the refineries down there, you know, carrying explosives. Yeah. So something's going on. You know, and last August, the head of the Venezuela military, Warren Columbia, with the U.S. behind the scenes, is planning an incursion. Even the Washington Examiner website says the invasion is coming. You know, it's a U.S. paper, conservative paper with a website, right? Senator Rubio reportedly has been telling Trump to invade in order to win the 29 votes, electoral votes in Florida, right? Remember, it wasn't too long ago in May 2020 that there was an invasion of mercenaries, which was totally thwarted at the beginning and the end for Guaido, of course. He was involved with that. It was a big, big failure. So it's coming in Venezuela. I think Venezuela is a major candidate for a foreign policy October surprise. Domestically, of course, the candidate is some sort of disruption, further disruption of the mail-in ballot situation in the U.S. Elections. And then, of course, the obvious one is whether or not it works or not, you're going to get a COVID vaccine announcement. Okay, we'll see if this prediction about the October surprise comes through. It will be interesting. It's going to have to happen here next 2-3 weeks probably because of all the mail-in ballot votings. By the way, you know, CNN poll showed that 55 or 60% of the Democrats are going to mail-in ballot, and only 21% of Republicans are going to mail-in ballot. And showing up to the polls, you know, it's just reversed there, far more Republicans. So on November 3rd and 4th, it's going to appear as if Trump is winning very clearly because the mail ballots won't be counted. And as the mail ballots begin to be counted in September, November and December, that will appear that Trump may be losing. Oh, well, that plays right into Trump's and his radical right-wing base saying, oh, the election will be stolen from us, you see. And then there'll be a fight over whether to count the ballots. And you'll get Trump trying to throw the whole matter into the Supreme Court once again, you know, and stop the vote, just as the Supreme Court stopped the vote in 2000 in Florida and pretty much declared George W. Bush the president as a result. Yes, we're going to have one too many Floridas here, mostly the blue states or swing states, in this election. And this will not be resolved on November 4th. It may not even be resolved in January. And the longer it goes on, the better it is for Trump to stay in office. Okay. That's it. I'm out of here. Next week. Streets are screaming now.